Well, now you got into this mess by going down a waterfall. Now, how would you suppose we'd get them out of there?
By going up the waterfall.
That's right. Anything's possible in Disneyland.
Welcome back to Up the Waterfall with your hosts, Zanna and Scott Otis, two adventurers sharing our love of Disney parks, story, and details with you. Whether you're a lifelong Disney fan or just discovered the parks, we invite you to join us up the waterfall and see where it takes us. Episode 51, Sending Out a Major Love. Welcome back, everyone. We're back in the podcast studio after a very brief hiatus because we were in Disneyland.
I love that place.
And we had all these plans to actually record and get it up last week, but that didn't happen.
Yeah, we were trying to do it on the day that we left.
Yeah.
Did not happen. Oh, well.
So we're finally doing this again, and we will keep up with it this time, I promise. Hopefully there will not be any more. It's going to be weekly. I don't even know if I said that on the last episode, but we are shooting for a weekly podcast because we're not doing big, epic, historical, researched podcasts anymore. It's just kind of like you and I talking and having fun, and aww, hopefully you guys enjoy that and enjoy our silly little stories that
I
we
enjoy
tell.
Them.
I mean, that's why we're married, right?
Aww.
Maybe if we weren't married, this would cause us to be married because we'd be listening to each other's stories and whatever. Anyway, so this week we are talking about what I actually wanted our next episode to
That's
be
true.
2 years ago. And
oh my gosh.
You had started to do research on it. I had thought about doing research on it, but had not actually done that. I got some shirts that I am wearing one of currently.
Oh, you got that then?
Yeah.
Wow.
To...
I thought you had it all the time.
No, I don't even know if I had a Captain EO shirt back in the day. I guess they sold them because I got some on eBay 2 years ago, but I was, I guess, more into this fuzzball guy that I have, who I have the original fuzzball.
Yeah, I never had any of the merchandise or any of the shirts, only because, I mean, I loved it. I just, I was not a shirts guy too much.
Wow, that's shocking. I was a shirts. Well, no, I really wasn't a t-shirt person back in the day.
You are now.
I definitely am now. It's the only way I can express myself, by putting weird things on shirts. So before we jump into the actual Captain EO-ness of it all, I want to kind of set the scene.
Oh, yeah.
Because if you are listening to this and you are under the age of 40, 30-something perhaps, you may not even know what Captain EO is. Of course, my children have been schooled in the classics and are aware of it and fans of Captain EO.
Absolutely.
But you may not know because it's been a while since it's been gone. And this all happened back in the 80s, the mid-80s. And personally for me, my Michael Jackson story, which I'm pretty sure I've told you this story before. I may have even shared it on a podcast or because we probably talked about Captain EO briefly in an Epcot episode, maybe.
Possibly.
Anyway, my mom one day came home with an album that was in a blue, like, box set thing. And it was the E.T. album. And it was, this was after E.T. had just come out. And
wow.
I was very obsessed with E.T. And I still have my little E.T. figurines and a stuffed E.T.
Right.
somewhere. And it was Michael Jackson reading the story of E.T.
Interesting.
And then the end of it, and it had like a booklet, you know, sometimes albums
mm-hmm.
had like
oh, yeah.
lyrics. Well, they usually always had lyrics in the sleeve, but this was like a whole book because it was a read-along of the whole story. And the last part of the album was actually not even Michael Jackson singing at all. It was the Neil Diamond song.
Wow.
From E.T., Turn On Your Heart Light. Do you remember that song?
Oh, yeah.
Turn on your heart light. And there was like a weird picture of, maybe there wasn't a picture of Neil Diamond, but there was a weird picture of Michael Jackson in a red sweater hugging E.T.
Yep.
awkwardly. in
I do remember
the album
that.
Cover or yeah. the booklet or something like that. So at the time, whenever E.T. came out,
82,
however young I was. Okay, so 82, if it came out in the summer, I would have been 8.
Wow.
No, 9. Sorry, I can't do math. Yeah, no, I would have been 8. In the summer.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's right.
So I was pretty young. I wasn't really listening to, you know, the radio or anything, I guess, at that point. I don't know. And I had no idea who Michael Jackson was. She was like, you know, Michael Jackson from the Jacksons. And I honestly didn't even know who the Jacksons were because I wasn't watching like weird. I mean, I probably had seen them on some show, but I wasn't. It was like the 80s. I hadn't grown up early enough to see them on like the Ed Sullivan show or whatever. I never watched that. So yeah, I really was kind of clueless about who he was. And I was like, okay, I love E.T. So I like listened to it a few times. And then like almost immediately after that, Thriller came out and I was like, who is this?
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, I got that probably for my 9th birthday, actually, the Thriller album, which I still have and has been passed down to future generations. And I became quite obsessed with Michael Jackson. And this was a time when you could go to like Spencer Gifts and like record stores in the mall, and they had like buttons and pins and and whatever. So I had a Michael Jackson painter's cap, which had like his signature on the front.
Wow.
And I covered it with buttons. And there was one like gigantic, like 4-inch button of the Michael Jackson with the yellow sweater vest. I don't know if you remember that.
Oh, yeah.
So that I looked like ridiculous, and I wore that to school every day, and it made a lot of noise. It clanked around, and that was just my thing. And I had a poster of the yellow sweater vest, Michael Jackson. He had like his hands in his pockets with the white pants and everything. Yeah, I just really was all about him back then. So that sets the stage for that. And then the 80s happened, and, you know, Star Wars was a thing. Michael Jackson was a thing. And Michael Eisner was a thing. And that kind of sets the stage for what's going to happen with Captain EO. Do you have any Michael Jackson origin stories you want to
tell? Yeah, let me just tell you mine. I mean, I was slightly familiar with him, like with the Off the Wall album, but not too much. But when Thriller came out, I was all about that. And
you were like 3 or 4 years older than me,
right,
depending on the
so
time.
I was about 12 or 13 when Thriller came out.
Yeah, that's like different than being
an
8-year-old.
Yeah, and then when Bad came out, that, you know, he was my all-time favorite artist at that point. So right around the Thriller, Bad, and Dangerous albums, I was Michael Jackson obsessed, but I didn't have the hat or posters or anything like that. I just had the cassette tapes.
Yeah.
And then later the CDs. And that's really all. But as you were saying, this was right around the time when Michael Eisner came into the company in 1984, and because of, you know, his earlier dealings in the movie industry, he had a lot of contacts, and one of the first things he did is he leveraged those contacts, and, you know, I think his first phone call was to George Lucas to basically get involved with the Star Wars and Indiana Jones franchises, which, you know, led to, of course, Star Tours, Indiana Jones, the Epic Stunt Spectacular, and, of course, now we have, you know, Star Wars all over the place.
Oh, yeah.
And Indiana Jones, too.
And we also owned them.
Very much so. But yeah, it all started with that. But actually, another call that he made was to Michael Jackson, who was very popular at the time, and recruited him to essentially do a film.
Yeah.
And Michael Jackson was a huge fan of all things Star Wars, too, and he basically wanted George Lucas. And so they called George Lucas. He ended up producing this, and they got Francis Ford Coppola to direct. So yeah, a lot of big name talent.
Yes. And this was right after, like, you know, Michael Jackson was a cultural phenomenon. Let me try that one again. Michael Jackson was a cultural phenomenon at that point. Like, this was the Motown 25, which is kind of insane to think about. Like, in the 80s, we were celebrating 25 years of Motown.
Wow.
And, like, That seems like it was just yesterday, but it's now like so long ago. Anyway, that was where he debuted the moonwalk. It was a big moment. And then he did that tour sponsored by Pepsi.
Yeah,
he had the
whole
Pepsi
worldwide
commercial.
Famous where, you know, fans were just going absolutely bonkers anytime he would make any appearance anywhere.
And luckily for us, he was also a huge Disney fan.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
huge
Neverland Disney Ranch fan. Was like his version of Disneyland.
That's right.
And we won't get into the specifics of that, he was a big fan.
Yeah, he would go to Disneyland all the time.
Yeah, totally.
And then when he became a huge star, he would, you know, essentially rent it out like late at night and all that to be able to enjoy it. So,
exactly.
Yeah, big time
and
Disney fan.
And Francis Ford Coppola at the time had a couple of flops with The Cotton Club, which I didn't realize was a flop until doing some slight research for this, just so I had my facts straight. But I remember that movie coming out, and my parents loved it. But I guess it didn't do too well. I think I may have seen it later on HBO or something like that. But also the movie One from the Heart came out, which I've never heard of, but apparently that was a flop too. So Francis Ford Coppola was kind of eager to, you know, tag along for the ride and do something that seemed like it would be a win-win situation.
Oh, yeah.
Not that Francis Ford Coppola is anything to, you know,
I mean,
turn your nose up at.
The Godfather?
Like, yeah, he's a very, very good director. They spent $30 million on it. And it was, of course, in 3D, which was exciting because previously in this location at Walt Disney World was Magic Journeys. What was the situation in Disneyland? And did you ever see it in Disneyland?
I did see it in Disneyland, although not many times. But it was basically in the little theater where, right at the base of Space Mountain.
Yeah, but what was there before this there?
I don't remember. I don't think they were using it for anything. I don't think, they definitely did not have Magic Journeys there, and they didn't... It was the same location as where the Flying Saucers used to be, but, I mean, they built Space Mountain over that, so.
Interesting. Well, if you're listening and you know the previous inhabitant of the Magic Eye Theater, did they call it the Magic Eye Theater there?
Eventually.
Interesting.
Yeah, I think, I truly believe the Captain EO was the first thing there in that theater.
Well, that's fun. I'm sure it was, like, from what I read, it was... obviously a much bigger premiere there. Like they had actual stars and stuff, but not Michael Jackson apparently. So also it was, the choreographer was the same guy that had done Flashdance and A Chorus Line.
Wow.
And later went on to do other things that, I mean, obviously Michael Jackson.
Of course.
Choreographed
because he's,
it as well.
He does his own. And he's an amazing dancer.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he later, that same guy, did the choreography for Dick Tracy. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Love that.
Also, the music that was not the Michael Jackson music was composed by James Horner.
I love him.
Yeah, he's a great composer. And he did Alien and Aliens. And Michael Jackson was a big fan of Alien. So you can see some of that influence in here, which we'll talk about in a minute.
Yes, definitely.
And he had also done something, Wicked This Way Comes.
Love that.
And Journey of Natty Gann. So he had a Disney connection already. And he also did Cocoon, which you may remember from the 80s.
I
actually saw that in the theater. And he later went on to do Titanic and, you know, of course, many other things.
Oh, yeah.
So this was all just, you know, a star-studded production team and cast because they also had Angelica Houston on
That's
to play
right.
the
witch.
Supreme Leader.
Supreme Leader.
Supreme Ooh. Ruler. Supreme Leader. And it was originally supposed to be Shelley Duvall.
That's right.
And she did not take too well to the extreme makeup that had to go on her. I guess she had claustrophobia.
And the restraints
and
of being all tied up in all of the
gear. So she was like, I can't do this.
The gear.
And they
That's
just
right.
tapped Angelica Houston, which I think is, I can't imagine Shelley Duvall.
No,
Which
not.
If you are unaware, she was in The Shining and she actually played Olive Oil from Popeye.
That's right.
Another one of my favorite movies from the 80s. And so Angelica Houston was just perfect in the role. And I just rewatched this short. It's a 17-minute film, and I just rewatched it before this to refresh my memory. And it really is like the perfect timing of right after, like, he had, George Lucas had just finished doing Return of the Jedi. So it's kind of got that, like, all the fun bits of Return of the Jedi with, like, the different creatures and things like that. But you still have, like, the outer space thing the flying through, like...
The trenches.
Yeah. And just you like land in garbage, just like in the original Star Wars. And plus then you have all of these 3D special effects that are, you know, you can't see them. If you can watch this on YouTube, by the way, if you haven't seen it, I highly encourage you to watch it and turn the volume up when the songs come on, because it sounds better that way.
What's amazing is that it was, per minute, the most expensive film ever made.
Wow.
Yeah.
I believe it.
Yeah, and it costs so much, you know, like as you were saying, like
$30 million
for 17 minutes. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the 3D effects, I assume, were, you know, very difficult and time-consuming to film.
Yeah, there were more special effects packed into this film than anything before.
And you just, you know, it opens up and there's like this kind of spirally galaxy Milky Way looking thing. And then this asteroid comes right towards you. So it's like all these fun special effects, and 3D effects like that.
Just like you were talking about with the stars, they had like a giant star field in the actual theater
to
make it, you know, essentially a 4D experience.
Yeah, and then they also had lasers in the original showing, which would actually... I mean, this Epcot was definitely known for lasers back when it opened. They had Laserphonic Fantasy, which I will never stop talking about. Was the best nighttime show. And the lasers inside Journey into Imagination, of course, that you would see. I mean, it was just like a big time for lasers. They were like having their moment, if you will. And so they literally, you know, shot lasers through the theater. And it was really cool to see them in the dark like that.
Oh, yeah.
And they had smoke effects as well.
Yeah, and you combine lasers with smoke effects. Yeah, that's a good thing.
And at one point, you land on this homing beacon.
Yeah, crash land. Yeah, and there, the green
light is flashing. It's kind of like, you know, a blue light special kind of light, or like a police light, an old school one. And it's flashing on the screen, and then they have that same type of light in the theater doing that same flashing effect. So it's really very cool. And we'll talk about the effects that they added and removed when they brought the show back.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, it was just such a fun combination of all of those George Lucas movies. And like I said, Alien, when you first... Yeah,
the Supreme Leader is like essentially like the alien creature.
Yeah, totally H.R. Giger inspired. I mean, he probably could have sued if he wanted to. I don't know. Maybe they brought him on for some consulting. I don't know if he was still around then. Anyway, very alien-esque, and her warriors and all of those things.
Oh, yeah.
And in addition, when he comes and does his song and converts people in, you know, from the crunchy, scary people into like fun costumes with colors, it's so 80s.
So 1980s dance.
Like every single costume piece, every piece of the teased hair.
And the hairstyles, yeah.
It's just unbelievable. It just completely encompasses what the 80s were. And at that point, like, there actually is a whole storyline, which is, I think, what makes it so great. They say based on a story from a Disney Imagineering.
Imagineering, yeah.
And it definitely feels like an extended kind of Disney ride.
Yeah.
Because it has, it's, like, it's a simple story, something but goes wrong, and then something, you know, happens. There's a happy ending. It's not just a weird story. It's not a story that you have to be completely like, who is this person? Where did he come from? Like, that doesn't matter. You're just seeing what you're seeing.
Yeah.
And then when he comes on the screen and does his songs, then he's Michael Jackson, basically. He's singing a Michael Jackson song. He's doing Michael Jackson moves.
And yeah, all of the moves, all of the, even just the ticks and the...
Yeah.
And the...
Like, when he does his little hip thrusts, it does, like, the maracas shaking.
Oh, yeah.
It's very funny.
I mean, there is a little bit of backstory, like when Commander Bog comes on, you know, he's basically saying, you know, how he's screwed up so many previous missions.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're trying to redeem themselves.
Right. And that's what makes you, you know, immediately identify with the characters. They're a ragtag
Ragtag band. led by the infamous Captain EO.
Yes. And the creatures, you know, look like something that Jim Henson would have designed, perhaps, but I don't think they are Jim Henson creations.
It's like Fuzzball.
Oh, Fuzzball. Of course, you know, I have a history of falling in love with tiny, cute animals, and he was no exception. I immediately, after seeing Captain EO for the first time, went to the gift shop and got Fuzzball, who was sitting right here behind me. This is the original one. If you, they still sell them, I think.
Well,
or they did maybe
originals,
when they brought back.
But,
but when they did, the eyes are now fabric eyes because these are a choking hazard. So that's how you can tell if you have an original one.
The super long tail. I mean, it was essentially Michael Jackson's or Captain EO's companion.
Yeah, he's so cute.
Which would hang out on his shoulder.
I mean, if they did them now, they would probably make them move around like the little Pandora things that they have.
Yeah, but I mean, basically his ragtag band, the other characters, what, they had the Major Domo
and Minor Domo,
who was essentially like robot-type characters, one of which kind of conveniently fit right into his back.
Yeah, super cute. And it kind of fit with, I'm sure this wasn't intentional because it's just like a generic robot design, futuristic android-looking thing, but it was very reminiscent of the robot butler in Horizons.
Oh, that's right.
As well, kind of. He has like a bigger jaw, similar looking. And then there's
Idy and Odie?
Idy and Odie, who, no offense to them, I was never a big fan of.
Yeah,
because
this
they
is
were like
a,
the annoying
essentially
people
a
that
single,
were like, okay.
A single unit, but
creature.
With two heads.
Yes.
And two identities, but in a kind of trapped in one body.
And to me, like all the other creatures looked like they could be real creatures. And this, to me, like their fur was very fake looking fur. And so I never really like took to those guys because it's like, eh.
Yeah, I agree.
And
then
they
there
were
was
annoying.
Hooter.
And they yelled at Hooter.
Yeah.
And I didn't like that.
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah. And Hooter, he was this like, small looking kind of elephant type creature. Who we've seen creatures like this in some of the Star Wars movies too, right?
Yeah, similar.
But yeah, Hooter, he kind of would make a mess of things.
Yeah, he was very cumbersome and would bump into things. And
yeah, and you know, and even in the story, you know, he trips over Captain EO's coat and kind of messes
his
up the
beautiful
little
cape. Oh, get it right.
That's right, his luxurious long cape.
Yes. But he tries his hardest,
well,
and
yeah,
he fixes
I mean,
things.
And
like,
he was able to use his trunk to get the sails in so he could kind of zoom through the trenches like what we were talking about.
Exactly.
That's right. He has his own redemption.
It's so true. And, eventually, you know, the Supreme Leader is trying to battle him, and she calls her Whip Warriors,
yeah.
Down from, they were just like hanging out in pillars and
you know, installed in within the pillars, and then they would kind of
waiting for their moment to shine. And they were very like pop and lock kind of what breakdancing had turned into at that point in time. So that was fun. And they were also very like, I remember not liking them a lot when I was, they stressed me out.
Oh yeah. They're very stressful.
The whips, and they were like, so, like harsh.
Yeah, and they had a lot of gear on them, a lot of pipes and things.
I remember, you know, being full of anxiety every time, even though I knew there was happening.
I mean, even the Supreme Leader was that way, too.
Yeah.
I mean, she was essentially hanging from above from all of these.
Yeah, like a big spider.
Yeah, exactly.
I loved
the makeup,
how her teeth looked, though.
The makeup and teeth and also fingernails are kind of, they're almost claws.
Yeah, she would snap them together like I often do with
that's
my nails.
Right.
And she would say, "You think me beautiful?" And I would say that a lot when people would say that.
Our world with your presence.
Yeah. And just like, you know, obviously every time we would go to Epcot, we would go there. And I'm same with you. You probably went more than I did because you would just be at Epcot nonstop. But
yeah, we went to the parks all the time after work. And so every time we were at Epcot, we saw Captain EO. I'm sure hundreds of times.
So you come to memorize the lines.
I really
and, like,
did.
Just the funny way that, like, he says, talking about the beacon, like, "We crashed right into it." Like, what? No one talks like that. That sounds weird. But it was funny because it was Michael Jackson saying it. And Yeah. So anyway, going back to the whip warriors. So then when they're turned into nice, colorful people, they're just like breakdancing still and popping and locking.
Oh, yeah.
And then he finally has all his magic focused on the supreme leader.
Because he's finally converted all of these dancers to his side.
He turns her into a beautiful princess type person. Very reminiscent of, like Princess Leia at the end of Star Wars or something. But more colorful.
Yeah, a lot of color. Rainbow.
She always had like a cool little like weird thing around her hair and her...
That's right.
Neck or something. I forget.
Some sort of a hood / veil.
Yeah. I was, when I rewatched it, I was like, this would have been a good thing to like cosplay if I could.
And I'm sure several people have.
Yeah, probably. Pretty obscure enough to, but people would probably recognize it at D23 Expo or something like that. Anyway, I think that outfit is also like, you know, people could wear that now and it would be like in style.
Yeah.
But nothing else in that movie would be in style now.
But it would be fun as you said, like a cosplay.
And it's just like he turns her into that and then he's like, okay, that's your gift. Now you're beautiful and stuff.
Well, not only that, but the entire world, their planet has transformed into a beautiful naturescape.
Yeah. Whereas before, sending out a major love.
That's right. Whereas before, it was just so very industrial and, as you said, like full of trash and pipes. And
see you later, and trash cans. I forgot about that line.
That's right. Her punishment, was super harsh when she initially caught them. She was going to turn the others into trash cans.
Which is weird because it doesn't seem like a world that would even have trash cans.
But there was one on Hooter's head.
That's
when he was using it as a disguise.
That is very true.
And then also, he was going to, basically for him, for Captain EO, 100 years of torture in her deepest dungeon.
Wow.
Wow.
Interesting. I feel like we need a part two.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that, you know, they never suffered these punishments because...
It's true.
Because he delivered that gift.
The music changed the world.
Oh my gosh.
So then... She comes down, and then he's like, okay, bye, I'm leaving now. And they sing an even better song.
Another Part of Me.
Yeah, which is just, it's impossible not to move to and sing along to. Like, when this came back in the parks, which we'll talk about in a second, it was just like I didn't want to leave the theater. It's just so fun to hear it in person. And
yeah, I mean, I always remember when, you know, leaving the theater at Epcot, you know, and going into basically where all of those jumping fountains are, they would always play the music out there too.
So that, like, the doors would be open and it would be loud and you'd be walking out.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so,
it was a fun time.
And even when I was, you know, playing with the fountains instead of watching the movie, you know, you would always hear the music out there too. So.
Yeah.
And you'd know when the theater was exiting.
Yes.
What a fun time.
This was in both of the parks until 1997.
That's right.
When Honey, I Shrunk the Audience.
Yeah, I don't know if we had mentioned it. It had opened in 86. And then
September of 86.
But then it was in Tokyo and Paris as well.
Yes. And... Oh, wait, you said that. I was going to say, and Euro Disneyland.
That's right. In Paris.
Yeah. So they decided to, you know, I guess Honey, I Shrunk the Kid was a big movie, and they're like, oh, we can change it up, and people are probably bored of this by now, I guess. I don't know. And they made it Honey, I Shrunk the Audience in Walt Disney World.
Mm-hmm.
What did they do in Disneyland? You know?
They also played
that's
it.
Weird. That seems
that
like
too.
Very out of place in Tomorrowland.
Yeah. And they played that in Tokyo. And I think Paris too, but I'm not sure.
Interesting. I was never a huge Honey, I Shrunk the Audience fan.
Yeah.
Because,
it's an acquired taste.
Like, the new effects that they added with, like, the mice running under you and, like, hitting your legs was not... enjoyable.
It was a little intrusive.
Yeah. And the snake part, I never liked snakes either. But outside of that, it was fine. But I never went as often as I went for Captain EO. And then in 2009, June 25th to be exact, which I remember because that is when I started writing Xanaland.
The exact same day. Right?
Yeah. I was like, you know what? Because Xanaland existed, but was just I was making it just a weird blog. And I was trying to be funny. and blog at the same time or whatever. And it wasn't working out because it's kind of hard to be funny on demand and so or witty. And so I was like, you know what? Everyone keeps telling me to write what I know. I'm going to write about Disney. And I wrote this whole thing about my family going to Disney and my history of Walt Disney World and stuff like that. And then the news came on and Michael Jackson had passed away. And I was like,
yeah,
immediately I felt the need to write a blog post about me meeting or like not meeting me experiencing, Michael Jackson, which I told you guys at the beginning
that's
of this.
Right.
Now you don't have to read that blog post, but that's basically what it was. And my my oldest two children now were young at the time. They were 8 and 9. And I was like crying watching the news because, you know, he had had a huge effect on my life.
A big impact on the world.
And he was gone too soon, in my opinion. And so I was like crying and writing a blog post and trying to take care of kids and a baby. And
wow.
So after that, people had asked Bob Iger if he was going to bring it back.
Yeah,
and he's like,
so
we don't know if we're going to do that. I don't know. And then they did in 2010. Mm-hmm. And it was the Captain EO tribute.
That's right.
Because they had, you know, all these new effects in the theater.
Yeah, they had removed a lot of the effects from Captain EO and put in new effects for the Honey, I Shrunk the Audience.
Yeah.
And so,
like the chairs vibrating.
Well, and the whole theater essentially moving.
That's
kind of
true.
Like
because
as a ride.
Shrink.
That's right. So they incorporated that into the new Michael or Captain EO tribute.
They did not bring back the lasers.
Sadly.
So if you did not see it in the 80s, you missed out on the lasers. But they did still have the little flashing beacon light. Mm-hmm. And they added, you know, the seats kind of vibrating because they had that technology for the other thing.
They even incorporated some of the as I said, the effects from Honey, I Shrunk the Audience, like the little mice that you were mentioned.
They became the whip warrior.
The
things.
Whip warriors, and then the spray was
Hooter sneezing.
That's right.
But I was still happy it was there. I actually got to go to a media event for it because this was, you know, like I said, right when I had started my blog in 2009. This debuted in 2010. I'm not sure of the month. But it was a fun time, and I got to bring my kids there to see it, which I never thought I would be able to do, I guess. And
yeah, and it's turned out I actually saw the tribute in all four locations.
Wow, look at you.
In Disneyland and also in Paris and in Tokyo.
Were all of the effects the same?
No. There were varying different effects in use at the time, but none of them were similar to the original at Epcot or at Disneyland.
Wow.
But I do remember at the tribute, the one at Disneyland was quite a bit different than the one at Epcot. And it seemed a lot more shakier.
Interesting.
Yeah.
A lot of things are shakier.
That's right.
Except for Space Mountain, which is smooth like butter.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, that ran until December 6th of 2015 to make way for this incredible, incredible replacement called the Disney and Pixar Short Film Festival.
Yeah, and at Disneyland, they used it. They used that theater for essentially coming movies.
Oh, really?
Yeah, some Marvel films and Tomorrowland, Hero 6, things like that. And then, of course, then they incorporated a lot of the Star Wars, like the Path of the Jedi. I
mean, yeah.
Did I say that right?
I don't know.
Yeah, a lot of that they would put in there.
Hmm.
And so initially they put in a preview for an upcoming movie, and they implied that Captain EO would actually be coming back, but it never did.
Wow.
Yeah, they basically kept using it for movie previews and then Star Wars things as well.
Interesting.
Yep, and it never came back.
Wow. I don't think it'll ever come back now.
Yeah, I agree.
Which is sad in a way, but, you know, it's a totally... I think that people the youth of today would appreciate it because yeah. they seem to like 80s stuff.
Yeah, I mean, again. Luckily it had its day and it had a re-release. Yeah. So
I'm grateful for the times that I had and the memories that I have.
That's right.
It was a different time.
It really was. And very evident within the movie itself.
Yeah, that's true. What do you think would be a good fit in there now if they were going to do a whole new 3D movie based on, I don't know, I guess it could be based on anything, but it probably would be based on an existing IP based on how they do things now.
It would be fun if they did something with Figment and Dreamfinder, but you know, just go all out with the technology.
That would be a good way to bring Figment back and not have to redo the ride, which I wish that they would redo but
they should definitely redo the ride.
Yeah.
Absolutely, and I would certainly take that over my idea for this movie. But I would think there would be a way to kind of redo the entire pavilion, that and ImageWorks and the movie, and just essentially just go all out and bring them back in a super fun way.
I'm surprised, honestly, they haven't done some sort of Inside Out takeover of that, but I'm glad they haven't.
Yeah, because if they did that, the door would pretty much close for any of
And I think that's probably why they shoved the Pixar shorts in there, because, you know, they are imaginative in nature.
That's right. So, yeah.
Yeah, so that's our Captain EO memories, and we'd love to hear from you if you have any fond memories of Captain EO or what you think would be a good replacement there.
Yeah.
I think we should do a show sometime on how we would fix imagination.
So much.
That could be a fun research project. We could storyboard the whole thing and do blue sky stuff, whatever.
Absolutely.
That would be really fun.
Yeah.
I think I want to do that. But let us know other things you'd like us to discuss as well. And it was great to hear from so many of you when we had the podcast return last week. So thank you so much for your support and sharing it with others.
Yeah, we're definitely happy to be back, and we're excited for all the things to come.
Yes. And if you haven't already subscribed to wherever you are currently listening, or somewhere else, if you find another podcast site you'd like to listen to, let us know if we're not on there, but we should be everywhere. You can hit notifications to find out when our goal is to do every Tuesday, every week. So if something strange may happen
which is certainly possible,
we might travel somewhere and not plan ahead. You know, we both work full-time jobs and I do a lot of stuff on the side.
Yes, you do. You're a very busy girl.
Yeah. But I'm almost done with school. So that's going to free up so much of my weekends. I'll be able to do endless podcasts.
Yay.
But yeah, so hit notifications. Give us a review. I forgot to tell you this.
What's that?
Happening live.
Oh, my.
I went back into Apple Podcasts, and we have quite a few ratings now. Not necessarily reviews, but like...
I hope they're good ratings.
They are. We're still 5 stars, everyone. So thank you for those ratings.
I will go in and check those out.
Give us a rating. If you haven't, give us a review.
Yeah,
we'd love to hear your thoughts.
Honest thoughts, please. Yeah.
Because we're doing this... You know, because it's fun for us, but hopefully it's fun for you all listening as well. And again, thank you for your support. And thanks for joining us up the waterfall. We'll see you next time.
Bye now.
Well, I guess I should say we'll hear you next time. No, we won't hear them. They'll hear us.
Bye now.